mainly to give a talk. I'll talk about the two-dimensional spring. There have been lots and lots of papers on the subject. I wrote a number of papers, but I will be talking only about two papers that were recently written. I hope I got the numbers right. So why are we interested in low-dimensional spring theory? There are only a handful of examples of exact non-perturbative definitions of string theory: the BFSS matrix model, the matrix model, and ABS-DFT. These matrix models are unique in the sense that they are the only ones which are solvable. In all other examples, there's very beautiful correspondence, and people always have to say, and as we heard in many of the talks here today, if you believe this and that, then. Here we don't need to believe anything, it's just true, and we can calculate everything. It's really important to stress that this is also the only duality we know of where both sides of the duality are calculable. It's not that we calculate one thing at one end, calculate something at another end, and then we use, say, BPS, or cross our fingers, or hope that the results carry over. Here, at the same end, we can calculate in the two models and compare the answers. And as in the other example, some interesting phenomena are captured in a non-trivial way. We see here holography, I'll say more about that later. The way space-time is coded and the target space interpretation of these models is often very confusing. So most of the work in the subject was to take the exact results computed in the matrix model and trying to interpret them in space-time. So this is kind of my general introduction. I would also like to stress something that we will see from this talk, is that since they are solvable and completely well-defined, we really know what we're talking about, and we can use these models as laboratories to find new stringy phenomena. And I'll exhibit a new stringy phenomena that I have not yet seen before, in a more generic example. The first class of such models that I'll say practically nothing about in these models are the simplest ones, which I like to refer to as the minimal string theory or the C less than one model. They describe strings in one Euclidean dimension. There are lots of examples of that. And they exhibit many of the features which are common in current interest in string theory. They are D-brain, holography, flux vacua, etc. And also some topics of interest to mathematicians or connection to mathematics, connections to integrable systems, topological strings, and the list goes on and on. The two-dimensional string, unlike the minimal string, is a little bit weaker and more interesting because it has time. So it can potentially address some of the interesting questions associated with time. So that's what I'll be talking about today. The target space of these models has time running this way and space running this way. Space is denoted by little phi, it's a little direction. There's a linear dilaton in this direction. This is the weak coupling end. This is the strong coupling end. The way we perform experiments is we sit here at the weak coupling end and we throw stuff in, and then the stuff bounces back out, like here. And then we ask what's the amplitude for this process to take place. There are also other observables which I'll not be discussing here. It is important that the strong coupling region out here is effectively compact. This is not another boundary of the target space from which we can throw in stuff and observe stuff going out. In other words, we should find a unitary S matrix that everything comes in, comes back out. And unitarity is really built into the system because there is a Hamiltonian, which is Hermitian, time evolution is unitary. Three class of models are well known. These are the bosonic, which is old, and the newcomers, the 0A and the B matrix model. They can be described and they can be solved, and there's been a lot of literature about that. I'm not going to say anything about them here, except review a few general topics for notation. Instead, I'll be discussing four new theories, which are analogous, just as the 0A and the 0B exist in 10 dimensions. They are counterparts in 2 dimensions to other 10 dimensional theories. The 2A, the 2B, the heterotic O, and the heterotic E, like the SO32 and the E8 cross E8. These four matrix models they might or might not be a matrix model for them, we don't know. Therefore, we are less powerful than in the other three examples. But these models, already by analyzing their weak coupling behavior, we see a lot of new physics which I find puzzling. So they raise many new issues. So I stress again, we will only be studying these models in the weak coupling end. We will be standing in the weak coupling end of the target space. We'll perform some weak coupling, traditional string theory calculations. No calculation that, there will be no calculation here that could not have been done 20 years ago. And these models raise many confusing issues. First of all, we'll see that the excitations visible by, in the world sheet cannot have a unitary S metric. We just make a list of all possible excitations that we see in the world sheet. There is no way they can lead to a unitary S metric. And therefore, the theory must have non-perturbative excitations. That's not a big deal, but what is surprising is that these non-perturbative excitations have to be exactly massless. So there are non-perturbative excitations, exactly massless non-perturbative excitations, which are not visible in the world sheet treatment. The second phenomenon that we will see, which will be peculiar, we'll see that there are new stringy phase transitions associated with peculiar thermodynamics that these systems exhibit. So the simplest theory, the theory that most of us know about, are the bosonic 0A and 0B theories. They are all being characterized by having a finite number of particles in two dimensions. The simplest is the bosonic string. We all know that it has a tachyon. This is an awful name. I really hope somebody could change that. I put it in quotations because it's not tachyonic. It's really massless, T of T. So what we do in this theory, we send some tachyon in. The tachyon bounces back out, and we ask, what's the amplitude for this to happen? The spectrum is the same, but the interactions are different. In the 0A matrix model, it also has just a tachyon. The 0B matrix model is a little bit richer, more interesting, because in addition to the NS and S tachyon, it has a Ramon-Ramon scalar. So there are two massless scalars. This scalar has to be compact. Since it is a compact scalar, there are excitations in the theory where we wind around this compact scalar. So this theory has solitons, which again, not visible in the world sheet, where we wind around this scalar. In the context of the matrix model, we can compute the S matrix for these solitons, etc., but I'm not going to do it here. I just wanted to point out that they exist. How do we find the type 2 theory? So we take our guidance from 10 dimensions. We take the spectrum that we see, the theory that we see in two dimensions, 0A and 0B. They have a certain Z2 symmetry, minus 1 to the fermion number of the left movers, and we can mod out the theory by that Z2 symmetry. So it's clear that the tachyon is projected out, very much like in 10 dimensions. In the type 2 theory, there is no tachyon. Also, when there is a Ramon-Ramon scalar, half of it is projected out. And we are left with the following spectrum. So what is it? In the 0A theory, there was only a tachyon. The tachyon is gone. Instead, in the twisted sector, we get two fermions. In the 0B theory, the tachyon is gone. Half of the scalar is gone and the other half remains. I'll explain that in a second. And we get two fermions from the twisted sector. I'd like to make a few comments about this spectrum. There's a technical point which at least stopped me for 15 years, because I thought about this problem 15 years ago, and I couldn't perform this projection. And the reason I couldn't perform the projection is that projecting out the non-invariant state is trivial, but the real difficult thing with orbifold is always to figure out how the symmetry that we mod out by acts on the twisted sector state. And the novelty here is that the symmetry acts in the twisted sector opposite to what we are used to in 10 dimensions. Surprisingly, this leads to a consistent spectrum. So that's the first point I'd like to point out. Second, these models are very, very similar to the 10-dimensional counterpart. That makes them more interesting than just the type 0 theory. For example, the 2A theory has space-time parity symmetry. See, we have a left-moving fermion from the NSR sector, and we have a right-moving fermion from the RNS. The 2B theory is chiral. See, we have from the RNS and from the NSR sectors, we get fermions with the same chirality. And from the Ramon-Ramon sector, we get a right-moving scalar, a scalar with the opposite chirality. So this is very much like in 10 dimensions. In 10 dimensions, we have a self-dual field. In the 2B theory, this is this guy. In two dimensions, the self-dual field is a chiral boson. So this is exactly what it is here. Notice also that this spectrum is anomaly-free, and it's anomaly-free in a non-trivial way, very much like in 10 dimensions. It's a little bit more trivial than in 10 dimensions, but it is still non-trivial. In the 2A, we get one left moving and one right moving fermion, so it's a Majorana fermion, which is clearly anomaly free. In the 2B theory, the spectrum is richer. We have two left moving fermions and one right moving boson, together giving us something which is anomaly free. Also, the Wolfschmidt chirality is just as in 10 dimensions. Remember that Wolfschmidt chirality and space-time chirality are opposite between 2A and 2B and are opposite between space-time and Wolfschmidt. In other words, the 2A theory is chiral on the Wolfschmidt, not chiral in space-time. The 2B is chiral in space-time, but non-chiral on the Wolfschmidt. So that's the same is true here. I would also like to stress that this spectrum as it stands, so this is really straightforward, just working out the spectrum, checking that everything is consistent, that the operator product expansion is consistent and so forth. This spectrum as it stands is extremely puzzling. It's extremely puzzling because recall how we do experiments. We stand here, we sit here, we throw stuff in, so we can send in these fermions. And then we watch what can come out. So imagine we start an experiment with three of these fermions. We send them in. What's the S matrix? Well, there is no way to preserve fermion number if all the outgoing modes are these scalars. So the resolution is very simple. It's very much like what I've already said about the zero B theory, except that here we see this problem already at the level of the spectrum. This C field must be compact. It must have non-perturbative excitations associated with winding around the C field. With these excitations should carry fermion number. And then if we send in an odd number of fermions, at least one of these winding modes must come back out. Unfortunately, we don't have a matrix model for this system, and therefore we cannot see it explicitly. But the result here is a bit puzzling, and I think I have not seen it before. This spectrum of this theory, this is what the Wolfschmidt analysis gives us, is incomplete. And we know that the Wolfschmidt can be incomplete, and there can be more solitons or D-brains and so forth. But here we see where we miss massless particles that the Wolfschmidt does not give us. That's peculiar by itself. So these are the comments. The only one I forgot to say is, which is obvious, the spectrum of particles is finite. This will go as a theme through this talk. We'll always have finite number of particles, no Hagedorn density of states, no room for peculiar thermodynamics until the surprise. How do we study compactification? Well, there isn't much to compactify here. The only thing we can do is make time Euclidean and compactify. So we identify Euclidean time with x plus 2 pi r. The theory has a Z2 plus Z2 symmetry that we can tweak by. And therefore, we can study a whole moduli space of theories, very similar to what we see in 10 dimensions. We take any one of these theories. We compactify it on a circle. We twist by the three different indistinguishable, there are three distinguished way of doing the twist. Superficially, there are four from here, but one of them turns out to be the same as the others. And we get the following moduli space. We get a moduli space which looks like that, with eight lines of theories. At the corners, we see our theories in non-compact space, 0b, 0a, 2b, and 2a. And the lines connecting them are parameterized by the radius of the compactification. So from every theory, we can go out, can compactify three different ways, similarly here, 1, 2, 3, and so forth. But various p-dualities relate these compact theories. For example, if we just compactify in a circle, the 0b theory at large radius is mapped to the 0a theory at small radius, and vice versa. And we similarly have the other lines here. These four lines are a little bit more interesting. They are self-dual, and therefore with theory at r is the same as the same theory at 1 over r. And at the self-dual point, we have these blue circles, where the duality symmetry, the Z2 duality symmetry, these are self-dual points. The Z2 duality symmetry is embedded in a non-abelian symmetry. This guarantees that this non-abelian symmetry guarantees that the duality symmetry is exact and should persist to all orders in perturbation theory. Finally, I would like to mention that these two green squares here are theories that were known before. Another point which is worth stressing here, because it will be different later, is that when we look at the vertex operators, when we look at the vertex operators of all these theories after compactification, all of them have either pure momentum or pure winding. If we have a state which has both momentum and winding, it has to have different Wolfschmidt dimensions for the left movers and right movers, and we don't have oscillators to fix it up. So So all the states after compactification have both Q momentum or Q winding, and except with the state with zero momentum and zero winding, which is massless, all the other states are massive. In particular, there is no tachyon, there is no room for inconsistency after compactification. How do we compute the torus amplitude? The torus amplitude can be computed as in free field theory, and it's always of the form AR plus B over R, where A and B are constant and R is the radius. The constant A has the following physical interpretation. Since the amplitude is linear in R, this A is the vacuum energy density of the theory. As a check, we can compute it in all our theories, in every one of the compactifications, and we should be able to see that this number A is independent of which compactification we take. It's a property of the theory in non-compact space. If we attempt to compute A in field theory, we get an infinite result, but in string theory, it's finite because of the standard truncation to the fundamental domain. The number B, the coefficient B, the coefficient of 1 over R, can be calculated in field theory. We don't need string theory for that. There's a simple scaling argument for that. You just sprinkle alpha prime here, and you see that it survives the alpha prime going to zero limit. So we can just take the spectrum of the theory and compute B. One way of doing it is sum over, you compactify the theory on the circle, we look at the spectrum, and we just sum over all the momenta that exist. We might need to use some zeta function regularization. This is well known and well understood. This gives the finite answer, which is the number B. Some of these compactifications that I studied can be thought of as being thermal circles, where we compactify the theory on Euclidean time with a twist with minus 1 to the F, F being the space-time fermion number. So that should give us some information about the thermodynamics of the system. And then the number B really is a measure of the number of degrees of freedom in the system. In conformal field theory, this number is usually denoted by C, the central charge of the system. Here it simply counts how many degrees of freedom we have, how many scalars and fermions we have. T-duality relates, acts on this system as follows. In the lines which are self-dual, it simply maps the theory to itself under R goes to 1 over R, and therefore it relates A to B. In the lines which are not self-dual, it relates A and B of one theory to B and A of the other T-dual theory. That allows us to compute A also very simply, just as we computed B by summing over the momenta, we can compute A by summing over the winding. This prescription is very old. I think it's first due to Igor Klebanov and collaborators. Let me put out another theory, which is a little bit richer than these ones. The two-dimensional heterodic string. And the construction is completely straightforward. You follow your nose with what you learn from your favorite string theory book. Greenwoods and Witten, Nopolchinsky, or others, if they are. The first example is the heterodic string, HO. We take the right movers to be supersymmetric, the left movers are not supersymmetric. We just need to balance the central charge, so we need to add C equals 12 conformal field theory. We're represented by 24 free fermions. And there are two constructions which are really parallel to what we're used to in 10 dimensions. HO has a spin 24 symmetry, and the spectrum consists of 24 massless tachyons, again in quotations, TI, and they are both left movers or right movers. As always, the heterodic with EH is more interesting. This is the other construction where we split the fermion, and the spectrum is as follows. There is a spin 8 symmetry. This is a global symmetry, not part of the Lorentz group. The tachyons are in the vector of spin 8, and we have left-moving fermions in one spinner with one spinner chirality and right-moving fermions with the other spinner chirality. So this spectrum is really chiral. The left movers and the right movers carry different quantum numbers, but because of SOH chirality, the whole thing hangs together. This spectrum is exactly the same as the spectrum of the type 2A theory in 10 dimensions in the Green-Schwarz formalism, but this is only a peculiarity. The spectrum has some kind of supersymmetry, but the interactions don't have that supersymmetry. Again, I'd like to stress that there is no Hagedorn density of space, finite number of particles. And we repeat the same exercise we did before. We take time, we make it Euclidean, we compactify. Now we get a weaker moduli space because in addition to the radius, we can also turn on some Wilson lines, and we get a 13-dimensional moduli space. The first sign that something peculiar is happening is that when we look at the modes in one dimension, so we ask, what are the physical vertex operators? So before, in all previous examples, all the modes were either pure momentum or pure winding. Here, however, we have an infinite number of modes which have both momentum and winding. See, before, we take momentum, both momentum and winding being non-zero, there was some spin on the worksheet. We need to fix that. It's called level matching, but we didn't have any oscillators. Now we have an infinite power of oscillators, so no problem for any P and W which are consistent with the projection. We can set, add some oscillator. In fact, we can add the oscillator more than one way to get the spectrum. So we have a vast number of physical operators in the compact theory, a lot more than in the non-compact theory. This is the first sign that we are heading to something peculiar. It's important that as we move on this big moduli space, all these modes remain massive. No, at no point is there a tachyon. So the torus amplitude is always convergent. However, as we will see, some modes might become massless in the interior and some cause trouble. Let us focus on the thermal circle. So we compactify these theories with a twist with minus 1 to the S, which is a particular line in this moduli space, line labeled by the radius or the temperature. The HO theory has a spin 24 symmetry. At the self-dual point, both of them have self-duality. At the self-dual point, the spin 24, which comes from the 24 fermions, and the U1 associated with motion of the left-moving circle, combine into a bigger symmetry, spin 26. The EH heterotic theory, has the following: the spin 8 is enhanced to spin 10. So at the self-dual point, we have an exact non-abelian symmetry, which tells us that the T-duality is an exact symmetry of the theory. I really like to stress that because it will soon lead us to puzzles. The T-duality in the spectrum, and the T-duality is part of a continuous non-abelian symmetry. Let us compute the torus amplitude. So we do the same thing we did before. I've already told you that the answer is always of the form AR plus B over R, and I can give you a long list of models, one theory with one compactification or another, but let's focus on one example which is really characteristic. So we take the HE theory, we compactify it on the heterotic, on the thermal circle. Recall this is the theory which has spin 8 cross EH symmetry, and we find the following torus amplitude. The first thing we see that there is no term linear in R here, which means that the vacuum energy vanishes in this theory. That we can easily understand. This is a theory which has 8 bosons, 8 left-moving fermions and 8 right-moving fermions together give us something which has no vacuum energy density, and therefore there is no term linear in R. We also see that the answer is T-dual. We get 1 over R for R bigger than 1 and R for R less than 1. But notice that the answer is not smooth at the point R equals 1. This will be one of the points I'd like to stress. That the result of the torus amplitude, we just compute it straightforwardly, is not a smooth function of the radius. Let's compare that with the thermodynamics. Well, this is a thermal circle. We should be able to compute the one-loop approximation of trace e to the minus beta h as a function of beta using the non-compact theory. This is the computation that I first learned of, this way of doing it, from a paper by Joe Polchinski, but perhaps others did it before. In the course of this computation, there's a manipulation. We use Poisson rate summation, and then we go from the fundamental domain to the strip. By now it's straightforward. I think it is mentioned in the books I refer to. It's a classical statement. But if you check it very carefully, you see that these manipulations are not always valid. They are valid only when the radius is sufficiently large, or equivalently, the temperature is sufficiently small. Somewhere along the way, one has to exchange summation and integration. Integration over the modular space and summation over all these modes. And the behavior as the boundary of modular space of the torus, as tau goes to I infinity, these integrals don't converge. And they converge only if you first do the sum before the integral. And they're not converged the other way around. But for small enough temperature, that doesn't matter. For small enough temperature or large enough radius, these two operations do commute. And since these operations do commute, there is no problem and the proof is valid. But the thing we are after is what happens at very high temperatures. In particular, we are interested in this self-dual point where our answers are not smooth. At that point, this manipulation is not valid. Let us compare the two answers. If we take the theory on the Euclidean circle, we find this answer. 1 over r for r bigger than 1, and r for r less than 1. And this has a discontinuity, non-discontinuity. It's not smooth, it has a kink at r equals 1. On the other hand, if you compute the free energy by using the strip procedure or by just looking at the spectrum of the non-compact theory, what we get is that the free energy behaves like 1 over r. We just get the large radius answer analytically continued to all radii. We miss this phase transition at r equals 1. There's no room to get any non-analyticity in the radius. There's a finite number of particles. We just sum all of them, and we get this answer. The discrepancy between the two answers can be traced back to this lack of commutativity of the summation and the integration. I would really like to stress that the same puzzle exists in the same subtlety exists in 10 dimensions. The reason it's not being discussed there is that there is also a Hagedorn transition, which confuses the whole thing. So when the two expressions are not the same, yes, they are not the same, but they are both infinite, so therefore who cares? Here, they are not the same, the two expressions are not the same, and they are both finite. What's the physics of the transition? I stress the fact that we have an infinite number of modes which have both momentum and winding. Particular interest is a mode which has p plus or minus 1 is equal to w over 2. This mode has mass, in the one-dimensional sense, which is r minus 1 over r absolute value. This mode is crucial because we call that the spin 8 symmetry is enhanced to spin 10, and the 8 vector of massless tachyon is expanded to a 10-dimensional representation of spin 10. Therefore, it must be there as a self-dual point. We can write a Landau-Ginzburg description for this complex scalar field. Our space coordinate is little phi. Big phi is this Landau-Ginzburg field for this mode. And this free field theory in one Euclidean dimension is the Landau-Ginzburg description of the physics near the transition. And we can easily do the one-loop approximation, which is the torus that we've been talking about. We just integrate dp, and all the tools and the minus signs are correct here, I hope. And we get an answer which is the absolute value of the mass plus an infinite constant. So the absolute value of the mass gives us r minus 1 over r, which is precisely the change between the two phases. So we have managed to capture the physics of the phase transition, the non-smoothness of the torus amplitude, by this simple physical system, by this simple Landau-Ginzburg description. Notice that it's non-analytic in r. So the physics of the transition is associated with the radius, with this particular mode coming down. There is no Hagedorn transition. It does not become tachyonic. It comes down, touches zero, and goes back up. So we find the following puzzle. Is the Euclidean circle the same as temperature or not? Intuitively, it should be the same, because what is this Euclidean circle? It's just performing a trace, which we evolve for a certain amount of time, and then we glue it back in. This has always been confusing in string theory because of the lack of locality. So, and in particular, there are winding modes in the time direction. So that makes people perhaps a little bit uneasy about this argument, but there was this explicit proof that the two are the same. So I see two options, yes and no. Yes, the first order transition, if yes, we find this peculiar thermodynamics, we find a first order phase transition with negative latent heat, extremely unphysical. Equivalently, at low temperatures, we find more entropy than at high temperature. These two statements are equivalent, signaling perhaps that the number of degrees of freedom at high energy is smaller than the number of degrees of freedom at low energy. Perhaps you like it, perhaps or not, it sounds extremely unphysical to me. All standard thermodynamical inequalities are violated here. So it might be that the system is unstable. I don't see what it can decay to. Everything is being calculated at extremely weak coupling. The alternative is that the Euclidean circle is not the same as temperature. That is also surprising. I think this is actually the more conservative interpretation of the result. It suggests that the temperature might not be well defined beyond the transition point. In any event, I would like to stress that if we look at the higher order corrections, perturbation theory is not smooth around TC. The limit T going to TC does not commute with the weak coupling limit. This addresses many questions that we are interested in. What happens in string theory at finite temperature? What are the fundamental degrees of freedom? The non-locality in time? Winding modes in the time directions? A whole circle of confusions that unfortunately I cannot shed any light on except provide another example, which is perhaps just throwing a monkey wrench. A monkey wrench on these confusions. So in conclusion, we have seen many new two-dimensional string theories. They exhibit new phenomena. They are chiral in space-time, very much like their 10-dimensional counterpart. They need massless non-perturbative states for unitarity. They exhibit new phase transitions and peculiar thermodynamics, which is very difficult to interpret. It will really be nice to have a non-perturbative formulations of these four matrix models, of these four two-dimensional string theory, perhaps a matrix model, which will help us address all these confusing issues. I'll stop here.